You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Happy 2018, and welcome to the resurrected Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast. My name is Oz Davis. I'll be your host for the show. Joining me for our fourth season is my erstwhile colleague, Joe Pritchard. Joe, how's your year treating you so far?
So far, so good. Lots of attending to the baby, and not a lot of CFL talk, so it'll be good to spend a little bit of time talking about something in the real world for once.
Oh, okay. So the CFL is the real world. Now, I like this. Okay. Good attitude to start things off. Now, this year on the show, we've always been a two-man act, but we've been, well, at least I have for a long time, pining for our new third member to join us on this show. And this year he will be joining us. Please welcome to the show the man who appreciates a single pointer like no other, the man that we call on Twitter and in life, Dr. Rouge. Doctor, welcome to the show. We're pleased to have you. I'll tell you, I mean, I love your insights into the game, but anybody who consistently combines a Jean-Luc Picard meme with the CFL gets an upvote in my book.
Now you have to understand, Joe and I started those two seasons ago because I would get angrier and angrier and angrier as that kicker from Winnipeg would continue to make field goals, which, of course, denied or wasted Rouge opportunities. And from there, it just completely took off.
Right, you can catch when the season starts. You'll be able to catch the Patrick Stewart WTF meme, just decrying yet another Miss Rouge opportunity. Mm-hmm. But that's the introduction. I just want to get right back in the show because, like Joe said, we haven't done this thing in like 7-8 weeks now, and I'm jonesing to talk some CFL. I mean, my family doesn't care less. I have to work just to get them into Star Trek. All right, so let's talk some CFL football. Now, this, of course, is the show by Americans about Canadian football. And from time to time, I feel as though, as Americans, we kind of have a responsibility to sometimes explain and sometimes apologize for certain parts of our culture. And so, of course, for this first show of 2018, I'd like to talk about that story that has sort of unfairly sort of put a shadow over a lot of the other interesting CFL news, and that is the will-he-won't-he story of Johnny Manziel. I guess the most recent major thing we can talk about, because a lot of this is just media running with speculation, is that last week, Manziel's agent reportedly stated publicly, that's Eric Burkhart, reportedly stated publicly that the Tiger Cats have until the 31st to put forth a deal for his client, or else I'm not sure what. All right, we'll give it to the old hand first. Joe, your take on the Johnny Football story or non-story.
God, I'm hoping we can stop talking about this by February 1st.
Oh, we'll stop talking about it by the next show. But again, like I say, I think we have some responsibility to explain this, to apologize to our Canadian friends.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much what I'm saying. Is I hope that this story is running its course. I'm hoping that he decides that he'd rather not come north of the border.
Really?
Really, the only thing, I can't see much positive here for the league. Because either he comes in and he does well, in which case the general American fan will look at the CFL and go, hey, look, Manziel didn't do any good in the NFL, but he rocked the CFL. The CFL must be crap. Or he comes in and he fails, and the failure is blamed on Manziel and not the talent in the league. So I just wanted him to go away quietly.
Wow, interesting. Okay, Dr. Ruse, do you want Johnny Football to go away quietly?
There is no way he goes away quietly. He may go away, but he is not going away quietly. Look, Manziel has to understand one thing. He either has to acknowledge that he is not coming in being paid as if he is the league's most valuable player. And if he expects to get the top of the top dollar, then he will be watching the CFL season from his couch in wherever he currently lives and then pining for another opportunity to play for the Cleveland Browns.
Wow. Okay.
And we know what good that does.
I'm a little surprised at the sort of, a little bit on the negativity side. I mean, I can understand that we're all kind of burned out on hearing about a guy who never really amounted to much, even on the lowly Cleveland Browns. But Joe, especially, who's usually kind of sees the positive side of things. I mean, like, okay, what about this? Let me throw this at you. What about the case of Trent Richardson? I mean, okay, now obviously he's not like a headline hog like Manziel is. He didn't have this sort of substance or alcohol abuse problems that Manziel had or anything like that. But, I mean, here's the guy who people were kind of expecting either to dominate or to flame out. He did neither. He didn't get a lot of playing time. He played his role, and he was quiet about it. Is Manziel just too big an ego or too big a headline grabber for that sort of thing to happen, Joe? Is this totally out of the realm of possibility?
Absolutely.
Wow.
He is going to suck all the attention away from wherever he ends up, whether it's Hamilton, Montreal, the moon, wherever he goes, he's going to get all the headlines and all the attention. And that might be a good thing in some cases if there's other bad things going on, but the focus is just going to be on him and nothing else, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent.
Hmm. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Let's get off of that because, you know, we don't want to talk about that. What we want to talk about is this very interesting off season so far in the CFL. I mean, we haven't even opened up free agency yet. And this year was rather unusual in that, whereas often we get in the offseason that coaching carousel, this year we kind of had the quarterback carousel. At least we can say at least six teams made pretty significant moves at that quarterback position, even in the case of just a backup, in the case of, say, Edmonton, for example. But I'll just open this up for the discussion. Let's just do this in any random order. I don't want to be boring and go West team, East team. So let's go to the newbie first, Dr. Rouge. Tell me, Dr. Rouge, which team's moves or move have you liked best so far? And I don't know, maybe which have you liked the least?
I think I am most satisfied that it looks like James Franklin has a permanent landing spot. You know, there was so much question about where he was going to go. And yes, I'm biased. I'm an Argos fan. We know that. but, you know, I think I still don't think Ricky Ray is coming back this season. Everything logically says, you know, go out as a winner and go out with that really strong performance in some awful weather and as a Grey Cup champion. So I think I like what Toronto has done. I also like what Ottawa did. I mean, Ottawa brought in a guy who has put up some fantastic numbers. Sure, he has not yet led his team to a championship, and Trevor Harris, I think, is perhaps going to be unfairly labeled the guy with the big numbers, but no championships if, again, we see Ottawa sort of flame out to this point. And to me, the biggest still question mark surrounding quarterbacks heading into the season, I think, is does Jonathan Jennings rebound in BC?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, especially since Travis Lulé is no longer mm-hmm. around, right?
I'm glad you brought that up early, Doctor, because I don't know. For me, I mean, it was all well and good that the Red Blacks re-signed Trevor Harris, but isn't the real question going to be about which of these wide receivers comes back last year? I mean, because we saw what happened. This was a team with 4,000 yard wide receivers plus a fifth guy who could have been there if he hadn't spent so mm-hmm. much time on special teams. They lose two of those guys. The third guy spent most of the season, you know, injured, and you see what happens. I don't know. Isn't this almost bigger than making sure Trevor Harris sticks around?
Yeah, and again, you know, you think about the fact that after Ottawa won the Grey Cup a season ago, you know, they sent away two the two most prominent receivers on that team.
Right.
Granted, Chris Williams was still rehabbing from a torn ACL. And, you know, numbers wise, they didn't have a tremendous drop off. Obviously, the biggest drop off was that, you know, in the playoffs, they were a one and done instead of being the team standing at the end. Yeah, I agree. You know, Ottawa, to some extent, is that team that you look at right now and you think, yeah, they're in the East, so that means they're going to have a chance. But, oh, boy, if Hamilton is all that it's advertised to be and Toronto comes back stronger than perhaps it was last season, you know, Ottawa could be in for one of those, oh, boy, kind of years.
Yeah, yeah. You almost wonder. I mean, it's going to be really interesting a few years down the line if Ottawa flames out this season to mm-hmm. see how history treats those past two Ottawa teams, mm-hmm. you know, because, I mean, here, when we have a couple of legitimate teams, possibly in the East next year, maybe we're going to look back and realize, well, Ottawa got the benefit of some weak Eastern Division play and a couple of breaks mm-hmm. going their way, rather than, you know, some miracle play at quarterback, which is probably where it should come down to. What about you, Joe? Impressions from the offseason? Which teams have you liked?
Well, staying on the Ottawa topic for a bit,
sure.
I actually thought Ottawa played, might have been a better team last year than they were in their Grey Cup year, especially considering that they had the four receivers in the Grey Cup year. They only had the two this past season, and Harris was still putting up the numbers and still doing very well. The offense was still scoring a lot of points. They just played to a little bit more bad luck, which is something I've been banging the drum
yeah.
on, that we're going to see Ottawa start to have some worse luck because they got all the luck in 2016.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They got hot at the right time in 2015. They were 12-6, but their numbers said that they were 9-9. Last year they were about where they were supposed to be, but got hot at the right time. And then I feel like they played into a little bit of bad luck. They might have been able, they should have probably won the East considering their point differential and a lot of other things, but they got bad breaks instead of the good breaks they'd been getting the past couple of years. So I wouldn't be too quick to push Ottawa down the stairs on this. I don't think they're done yet. But as far as the team I like right now, as far as what they've done in the offseason, and I hate to have these words come out of my mouth, but I think the Saskatchewan Roughriders did a great job, especially considering they're working on a contract extension with Zach Collaros, which would even out some of the money. If they can get that done, they've got Collaros and Bridge instead of Glenn and Bridge, so they've solidified a quarterback spot there. That's huge in this league, and they didn't have to spend a lot to make it happen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, here I was all set. I was adamant that these guys were going to get Franklin. Then we have all these reports that, you know, Jones is working out Manziel, and instead they end up with Zach Collaros, who, although, you know, there's much to be positive about here, but the truth is he hasn't really ever regained that form that we saw in the first half of 2016. Are they taking a bit of a risk here by putting so much into Glarus's hands, Joe?
Some, but they also still have Bridge around.
Yes.
So we know what Bridge can do. I'm sure that they believe Glarus's ceiling is higher, but you could take that kind of risk when you have a guy like Bridge around that could get you to a 500 or better record, even in that Western
Division. Yeah, I think Bridge made one of the best possible moves of any quarterback in this offseason by re-signing. I think he's one of the better third down quarterbacks in this league. He's a great goal line quarterback, and that's what he should be doing, coming in a pinch. That's what he should be doing. How about it, Dr. Roosh? You like the Rough Riders moves?
I do like the move. You know, I like it for a couple of reasons. One, you know, Caleros is going to be one of those, you know, we talk about Johnny Manziel and all of the sort of angst that seems to surround everything he does. Caleros just sort of shows up for work, does his job, goes home, shows up the next day, does his job, goes home. You know, what I think will be fair or unfair for him this season is obviously because Brandon Bridge is the backup, and obviously Brandon Bridge is such a popular figure, not only in Saskatchewan, but throughout the CFL. If Caleros shows any signs of struggling or any sort of hint that his shoulder is not really where it should be, and if Saskatchewan therefore gets off to a kind of, you know, 2-3 or 3-4 sort of start, are we going to see people clamoring for Bridge? And does Chris Jones listen to that? Where obviously last year he did not. He insisted Kevin Glenn was his starting quarterback, and he, you know, again, Kevin Glenn took him all the way to the East Final, and minus a fantastic last 2-minute drive by the Argos, Saskatchewan would have been the team in the Grey Cup.
Yeah. Yeah. Well put. Now, okay. Go on in just a second, but what about this? Flip side of this is the Tiger Cats. Now, June Jones, of course, he's very happy with Jeremiah Masoli, what he did last year, namely go 6-4 once they inserted him in as the starting quarterback. But isn't that a bit risky going all in on Jeremiah Masoli, who, to be honest, I mean, that was his best show last year when he went 6-4. What do you think, Doctor?
And there was zero pressure on that team. I mean,
let's exactly.
There was no pressure on that team. There will be expectations in 2018 that they will be able to, you know, turn things around. You know, especially with, if my memory's being kind to me, the 150th anniversary of the franchise is in 2019. And there's obviously going to be a big push to make that sort of, you know, the magical sort of year. Yeah, you know, Mazzoli and Jones and everybody now faces a, oh, now they're expecting us to win. What do we do? I agree. I don't know if Mazzoli is the guy that you say is bulletproof, so to speak, and it's going to be the perfect answer. I do think for what June Jones wants to do, though, that Mazzoli made more sense than Caleros.
Certainly. That's his guy. That's his guy.
Yep.
I mean, that's the point. We see this a lot in football. You know, the coach comes in, or there's a transition or whatever, and you got two guys at the same position who are, maybe one's a little bit better, whatever. Doesn't matter. Coach goes with one guy. That's his guy. That's it. It doesn't matter if Caleros is better, could be better. Mazzoli is, you know, Jones's guy. That's who he's going to stick with. I'm going to throw in my 2 cents here. Ho-hum. I'm going to pick for the winner of the offseason so far, the Edmonton Eskimos. Of course, we knew that Franklin was going to leave. We knew that Mike Riley isn't going anywhere. But first off, at quarterback, they made the move that has all the history geeks and trivia buffs excited, right, Joe?
Bingo.
Right. They made the move. Kevin Glenn, now aboard with the Edmonton Eskimos, and aside from, you know, gaining notoriety as the first player to play for all 9 contemporary CFL teams, you know, this is maybe his ideal landing spot. This is, you know, he's going to be entrusted to play, God willing, maybe 1 or 2 games this season. You know, he's the veteran guy you want in there to run the set plays. I don't think that the Eskimos really do anything fancy or complicated on offense in terms of playbook or anything like that. So I think this is a great acquisition. And I'll tell you what, here's what else I like about this. Because the Eskimos traded James Franklin, they scored Mason Woods. And I was shocked about this. I didn't think that Mason Woods was going to leave Toronto. They were very high on him out of the draft last year. And one of the writers here at the Edmonton Sun pointed out, Gary Modajongo, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, but anyway, a writer at the Edmonton Sun pointed out that now on that Eskimos offensive line, you have a 6'8 guy, a 6'9 guy, and a 6'11 guy with a line that gave up the fewest sacks in the CFL last year. Oh, and by the way, Darrell Walker re-signed. Eskimos scary again? What do you think, Joe?
No, I think the Eskimos will be scary, but the thing about Woods that worries me a little bit about him is he was expected to go a lot higher in the draft last year. He fell to the second round, which is 10 picks, but still, he fell from top two to the second round. And then the team that picked him, that was so high on him, moves him the next offseason. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he was that good, would they have pulled the trigger on that unless that was the only thing Edmonton would take back in return? Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that Woods is as going to be as high of a caliber player as you are, simply from those two things, the fall in the draft and then being moved after one season. So that's got me going a little bit.
Well, he was certainly raw. But with all the surprising moves that the Argos made last year in general with the new front office and the new coaching staff coming in en masse, I'm not too surprised about this. Where do you stand on Mason Woods, Dr. Rouge?
I'd hate to be the guy in the offensive line who's 6'6". I mean, you're a shrimp. I mean, you could just see them walking up to the guy who's 6'6", go, hey, shorty, you know.
Tiny.
Yeah, tiny. I mean, you know, and you know, it's like, you know, we'll do a job for it. Just get out of the way, you know, short guy kind of thing. Woods makes sense if he gets into a situation where with a veteran line and a strong presence at coach, he has an opportunity to develop. That probably exists in Edmonton. If we begin to see a little bit of maturity out of Jason Moss as a head coach, you know, forget the field goal at the end of the game against Calgary, set that aside. That sort of volatility on the sidelines, that has to go away. That absolutely has to go away. You know, he has to rein in that intensity. You know, if you look at Chris Jones as sort of a comparison, Jones has that intensity from beginning of the game to the end of the game, but it's always controlled. And, you know, too many times last year, I saw Moss and I saw somebody who just didn't seem to be able to rein it in when it counted and keep the focus on what his team was doing on the field. If he develops more confidence we'll use the word confidence as a coach, and Woods is surrounded by some veterans. Yeah, he's got a chance, I think, to be very good. Again, unless there's something that we're missing in his makeup and he doesn't want to be successful. But I don't think there's anything there to suggest that that's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah. Jones always stuns me like this. I mean, during the game, this guy drops F-bombs like nobody's business, and they're constantly showing it on the TV. Then he gets into the press conference after the game, and instantly he's, you know, Southern gentleman on his way to the cornbread festival. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing the way that dude turns it on and off. And yeah, you may be right. That's actually an interesting point. But on the other hand, here this guy is, Mason Woods. Now, obviously, last season he was very raw. But, you know, as they say, the man's 6'9", almost 350. Can't really teach that, right? Now, if he's on a line with a couple, three other guys who are similarly bodied, and they probably know how they have adapted to play this way against, let's face it, smaller, more athletic guys in the CFL. That could do him a world of good. That could do him a world of good. But yeah, I think it may come down to coaching. In any case, you know, I like the Eskimos offseason like I like their offseason almost every offseason. season. Right. Let's see. What else do we have here? What? Oh, yes. Okay, Joe. I've been wanting to talk to you about this one for a while. We've spoken a couple of times on the phone personally, but I have not asked you about my team and their new head coach. It was funny. I was talking with a friend of mine who's a CFL fan. He's a Stamps fan. And I asked him, I said, yeah, who was the Green Bay Packers coach before Mike McCarthy? And he could not come up with the name. That guy, I believe, is Mike Sherman. And he is now coaching the Alouettes. Had a rather checkered history after the Packers, kind of moving between Texas A&M, did a couple of offensive coordinator jobs in the NFL for a year or two, and was last coaching in high school ball. Joe, what can you tell me about Mike Sherman?
Well, I've got something positive and something negative.
All right.
So the positive is back when Ron Wolf was breaking down the 1999 Packers season, where the Packers had hired Ray Rhodes to be their head coach and came out and missed the playoffs for the first time in years. he was on the fence about firing him or keeping him, and he ended up letting him go. And then he interviewed a whole bunch of names, but the person he wanted out of all that was Mike Sherman, and he wavered on that too, simply because Sherman wasn't a name guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't supposed to be there yet, but he did make the hire, and Wolf made two out of three pretty decent hires for head coaches, Mike Holmgren being the third. Mm-hmm. He went with his gut and hired him, and it paid off for quite a while. The Packers were in the playoffs again pretty shortly afterwards. There was one season of above 500, but no playoffs, and then playoffs. But then Sherman got – here's the negative. Sherman got his hands on some of the GM responsibilities with Wolf retiring, and that's when everything went to crap real quickly. And when Ted Thompson was brought in, he was the first one out the door.
Yep.
So he's a coach that is talented enough to get Ron Wolf's attention when he's not supposed to even be in the running. And he's also a guy you probably don't want to have handling your player personnel. You have Kavis to ruin that for you in Montreal.
Thanks. That helps a lot. Okay, Dr. Rouge, I gave Joe the easy part of this question. You get the tough part. Okay. I want you to tell me something positive about this situation. Our quarterback now is a guy named Josh Freeman. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Josh, I mean, for me, when I saw that we had signed this guy, this was kind of like a personal karma thing for me, because Josh Freeman was a guy that I used to razz through the TV. I mean, I'm not even a Buccaneers fan. I got no horse in the NFC South race. But, man, it's just so much fun to make fun. The last time he played pro ball was in 2015 when he started a single game for the Indianapolis Colts. Prior to that, he had previously played in 2013, starting four games for the Buccaneers and the Colts and going 0-4. Anything positive I can get out of this, Doctor?
Well,
you're not a medical doctor, are you? Are you a psychological doctor?
Here's the thing for me for Montreal. If the commitment is there to make Sherman the long-term coach, and if the commitment is there to actually stick with a quarterback, let's see where this goes. Yes, I look at Josh Freeman and I think, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe right now. Well, I mean, there's still tread on the tires because the car hadn't been on the road at all. But let's also accept that, you know, Montreal right now is an organization that needs more than a head coach, more than a quarterback. What it needs is some sort of stability and identity. Sherman could definitely be that guy to provide that sort of quiet, steady coaching leadership. Can Freeman be the long-term answer at quarterback? I doubt it. But again, 4 or 5 years ago, I'd have said, wow, they pried this guy out of National Football League. Today, I look at Josh Freeman and I think, yeah, serviceable backup, maybe. But on that team, he starts. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and see where it goes. But, you know, we talked earlier about Manziel. Oh, God, Montreal, do not pick up Johnny Manziel. Do not do it. you know, well, again, you need a identity. You need stability. You don't need all that baggage that you know, Johnny Manziel brings in Montreal right now. Just don't.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that especially at the quarterback situation, the identity of the Alouettes is the Cleveland Browns. I mean, mm-hmm. Look, we had this team came back, reformed from Baltimore. Tracy Ham was the quarterback, came over from Baltimore. We got Anthony Calvillo after that. That's it. Since then, it's been a march of guys mm-hmm. from, you know, Florida Appalachian State or whatever. That look great for a couple of games and then are out, you know, and we've said this, I think 8 starting quarterbacks in the past 3 seasons. No, it's even more. It's even more than that. In any case, and every time it's like, give him a chance. And yeah, I mean, it turns out our best quarterback in the last 3 years is Brandon Brage. I mean, crazy. Anyway, all right. That's my rant for the week. About the only two teams that we haven't touched upon so far, those two teams that have been the quietest in the offseason, I would say. And one of those, of course, is Joe Pritchard's beloved Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Joe, are you at all nervous or anticipating the lack of moves this offseason, or are you cool with just kind of staying pat mostly?
I'm cool at the moment, but I'll see again if Mo Leggett makes it to free agency.
Right.
Now, of course, they did save the most important free agent. They re-signed Justin Medlock right. So he can drive Dr. Rouge nuts for another year. But at this point, I think we're just I think we're just kind of waiting and seeing as we get closer to free agency who's at deadline spur action. We'll see who actually signs and if they can make any personnel improvements possibly on defense. They do have Richie Hall again for this season, which I know a lot of Bomber fans aren't going to be all that thrilled with. We'll see. It seems like Michael Shea is kind of tying his boat to the to Richie Hall at this point. So we'll see if that happens. They really need to make that field side a lot sturdier because they were being picked apart all season long out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right on that score. Yeah, gave up a lot of points, scored a lot of points. Okay, let's do this one last. Let me ask you this, Dr. Grush. Okay, so it doesn't always mean very much to the players, and this is kind of something that fans and journalists like to talk about. But we saw it happen this year with the Atlanta Falcons, where we drove home this narrative of the Super Bowl hangover. Towards the end, it really did kind of seem to be affecting the players and the staff. What's the narrative for the Stampeders next year?
Oh, boy. I hate to say it this way, but I think it's if they do not win the Grey Cup next year, again, and we're presuming they're going to have the kind of regular season they've had over the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So let's assume they're a 12-6-ish team and probably winning the West if you're 12-6. Maybe 13-5. So let's say they have a traditional strong regular season. If this team gets to the Grey Cup and crashes and burns again, I don't think there's any other way to say it than there has to be a significant wholesale change, made somewhere. You can make the case if they had lost one of those games, if they had lost to Ottawa, beat Toronto, or beat Ottawa, lost to Toronto, you know, you could have made the case, all right, one team, one day, one game they beat. But mm-hmm. this is happening on a really big stage to a franchise that, quite frankly, should be the two-time defending Grey Cup champions right now. I think absent a championship, I think you're looking at the necessity to again, make some significant changes. You're beginning to look at a situation almost like Trevor Harris. A lot of yards, a lot of points, a lot of fireworks, and at the end of the day, you're still missing the ring.
Interesting. Okay, Joe, what would your take be? Narrative for the Stamps next season.
I think all people are going to talk about is, yeah, great, they're doing it in the regular season, but how are they going to do in the playoffs? I have a really hard time now with that because they have been so dominant over the past, I don't know, five seasons now.
Yeah.
That you're cheered that when it comes to playoffs, they just happen to be losing at the exact wrong time in the season because they're only losing two or three games a year.
Right.
Over the past three or four. They just happen to be losing the last possible game of the season instead of having that loss in week nine. They're still the best team in the league as far as I'm concerned, and until somebody else is as consistent as they are, I'm gonna keep saying it, and eventually one of these times, their timing is going to fall right for them, and they're going to be back holding the Grey Cup.
Yeah, they're not even losing games. They're losing overtime periods. Mm-hmm. You know, they're losing on single drives at the wrong time. You know, it's not like in these games, it's not like they're the Falcons and they're throwing away, you know, four touchdown lead or anything like that. It's not, you know, I mean, okay, but here's my question for you, Doctor, is this. Do they really need to blow up this team? I mean, what's the shame of being in that championship, of being in that Grey Cup, being a threat to win it all every year? I mean, you have the Cavaliers in the NBA. You have the Patriots or the old Indianapolis Colts or even the Pittsburgh Steelers who are a threat almost every year to at least compete for that Super Bowl. I think I'd rather have that than the roller coaster in Winnipeg or Saskatchewan of the past decade, wouldn't you?
I agree with you in that regard, and that's why I said I hate to say the idea that it might be necessary to, you know, take the franchise and make some significant changes. You know, I think maybe the best comparison is, you know, think about that Atlanta Braves team that was so good. They were without a doubt the best team in Major League Baseball for 12, 14 years. And they have they have one World Series banner to show for it, while that evil empire in the Bronx has about 17,000 of them flying,
The Marlins have two, and they've never won their division.
There you go.
That's my favorite.
There you go. And you know, chances are the Marlins will be like, you know, 162 this year or something, and surprise them. No, that won't happen. No, that definitely not. I agree with you. There is something to be said for consistency, for success, for the brand, so to speak, that is the Stampeders. You're to some extent, there's no question there's a victim of their own success going on up there. But if they get this close again and don't get over the hump and win, you know, the question becomes, okay, is it necessary for Hufnagel to come out of the GM box to again become head coach?
Yeah.
Is that what it takes? Do you do the unthinkable, so to speak, and say, okay, there's something missing with the quarterback. We're going to make this monster trade and bring in a new leader, you know, on the field. Again, let's see. I agree with Joe. There's no question this is the model franchise. And on paper, they should be the two-time defending champions and with every opportunity to go three, you know, to go three straight. I'll be curious to see the kind of character players they bring in free agency. They don't need to bring in a lot of top flight talent, obviously, but a lot of those character guys maybe make a difference, you know, as October becomes November.
Mm-hmm. That's all. And you make a good point there. That is one thing that they seem to do is they're able to shuffle in pieces and shuffle out pieces to this machine almost every season. They do have a few leaders that have stuck around for years. I almost wonder, though, if if there is anything missing, it's a few more long-term pieces that might be a little bit overpaid or might be maybe not quite the best guy for the position, but kind of become your franchise. Mm-hmm. They might not have as many of those as a few other teams do, and I wonder if that hurts them in any way.
Mm. Interesting point. Interesting point. Okay, well, let's put a bow on this first episode of 2018 before we get too out of hand talking about all this stuff. Perhaps next week will be a little bit tighter with your time, but thank you for listening to us this week. Let's wrap it up here. Dr. Rouge, congratulations for surviving your first show as a regular host of the Rouge White and Blue. Any final thoughts?
Well, if I'm Rouge, then we got to determine which one of you is white and which one of you is blue. I mean, there was no question I was going to be Rouge. There was no doubt about that, right? I mean, you see, what you got to do, too, now, you have to add, like, about four other O's into the title, all right? It's not enough to be just the Rouge, white, and blue. You got to be the Rouge, white, and blue. You got to emphasize it. You got to man up, guys. Come on.
Yeah, man up. Okay, well, here at the Rouge White
invited back.
You'll be invited back. Look, here at the Rouge White and Blue, I am the white boy, but I do want to point out that white is the universe.
Again?
I am the white boy. I am, but I do want to point out that white is also the universal symbolic color of peace. So, you know, I'm just saying it's all. Let's go to the Winnipeg Blue, Joe Pritchard. Joe, any final thoughts?
Yes, we have a Twitter account for the show now.
Mm-hmm.
It is at RWB Podcast. We also have a few other exciting things coming up, hopefully over the next month or a couple months here, but I'll leave a little bit of suspense and we'll have a few more announcements coming down the pipe.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Joe can be followed on Twitter at USFL Tecmo. That's TECMO. And Dr. Rouge, you are followable where?
Moretti PhD, but I'm wondering if I got to go ahead and get, like, you know, Dr. Rouge or something.
Oh, you got to get that.
Like an alter ego, you know?
Yeah, you got to.
That'll work.
You got to. You got to. We'll make a little superhero for you. For your icon.
Just don't.
It'll be great.
Just don't put that dang blasted kicker anywhere near me, all right?
your insignia can be Medlock with a slash circle around him. There you go. That's the Dr. Rouge insignia. Right. Okay. Well, that's a good start for 2018 here at the Rouge White and Blues. I'm Oz Davis, signing off for my co-host Joe Pritchard and Dr. Rouge. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.
Bigger than Dead Kim Jong's head. Dead Kim Jong's head.